Yeah, thank you very much, Don. And Ron, you said a number of things that really fit with the curriculum I'm going to be teaching here next week, the Resolving for Truth Retreat. Almost sound like you've been peeking at my notes. So I guess you don't have to come to that retreat, but you will have to come back to La Vida because they opened a new restaurant tonight. And it was quite good, so you have to come back and give it a try. Yeah. So we are here now for I Am That, and I am reading from Consciousness and the Absolute. Okay, bye, Ron. I'm looking at January 12th, 1981, and it starts off saying Maharaj is referring to his lighter. So whatever he's about to say, he's referring to his lighter. The flame will last as long as the fuel is here. Is there any question of emancipation or awakening for that flame? The body and consciousness, which come into being because of the five elements, can there be any emancipation for them? The one who is prior to the appearance of the elements is always there. What you are doing is using your mind and intellect. But what I say is not based on the intellect, but rather on whatever comes up spontaneously in consciousness. You try to fix that knowledge, which springs spontaneously from consciousness, into the structure of concepts you have built out of the mind and intellect. This can never happen. And, you know, this is something that Thich Nhat Hanh says as well. Bernadette Roberts says as well that and Michael Langford says it too. So it's really something that we're being cautioned about repeatedly. That when we hear a teaching, instead of hearing the teaching, we take what we already know and accept as true, and we try to make the teaching fit in that box. And as a result, we miss the teaching entirely. So here we have another teacher really giving the same warning. So I suppose that's something that we really want to watch in ourselves to make sure that we haven't already decided what truth is or what the teaching means, and then we're trying to squeeze that into our box. The best way to listen to a teaching, of course, would be boxless, right? I remember also once Adya Shanti said, the way that you should listen to a teaching is the same way that you listen to the wind. I see Don and Shauna shaking their head. They must have heard Adya Shanti say that too. Yeah, when we listen to the wind, we don't try to understand it. You just hear the sound of the breeze. You're not trying to understand it. You're not compartmentalizing it and trying to figure out how it fits with what you know about the sky and the rain and the grass, right? You just hear it. So that's kind of an interesting way. It's really being empty and just allowing the teaching to come in and penetrate without thinking about it. Just being the empty spaciousness, without any ideas about what is true or not true, and just allowing the teaching to come in. The questioner says, why do I feel such satisfaction here in Maharaj's presence? And Nisargadatta says, because that need, which arises in consciousness and brings you here, is satisfied. Well, that's kind of funny because I could say, why am I so satisfied with this chocolate bar? You know, because that need that brought me, that arose in consciousness and brought me to the chocolate bar is now satisfied. I mean, that's how simply Nisargadatta is explaining this. There was a need that arose in consciousness in you, and you allowed that need to move you here. And now, right now, while you're here, that need is satisfied, and so you feel satisfied. Why do I feel such satisfaction here in Maharaj's presence? Because that need, which arises in consciousness and brings you here, is satisfied. Some people come here for knowledge. I talk because the words naturally come out. There is no intention behind my talks that you should get knowledge. Others come here because they are in difficulties. I make no determination that those difficulties should go away. But the fact remains that in many cases, they do go away. I merely sit here. People come and go. I am not concerned. They come here from long distances because the consciousness feels the need to come here. The individual doesn't come here because of an intellectual decision to come here. Consciousness takes him by the ear and brings him here. So sometimes consciousness takes me by the ear and brings me to the chocolate too, right? Same thing happens. My next door neighbors don't come. But people from all corners of the world come here with a sense of urgency. Why? And that really reminds me of Jesus saying that you can't be a prophet in your own hometown. And I don't know why that is, but I do know that's true. I know that, and in fact, they talk about this a little bit in that new group they have where they talk about the scruples that a spiritual teacher should follow. I know that a spiritual teacher has to be careful how close she gets with the people that she teaches. It's kind of the same phenomenon as when you are a boss, you know, in a corporation. You have to be careful how close you get to the people who work for you. And that's because people listen differently based on these relationships. People who, in most cases, now there are exceptions to this, just like there's exceptions to every rule in the world, right? You know, Ron would never ever think of me as a teacher or a minister. And I'm talking, of course, my boyfriend, Ron, not Ron Rates. Even though he knows intellectually that I'm a teacher and a minister, he never ever ever thinks of me that way. He thinks of me as his girlfriend. And so that's the role that I have for him. It's the same thing, you know, my mother thinks of me as her daughter. Jasmine thinks of me as her mother. And when it's the same kind of thing. If people really thought of me as their chum, I'm using that word because I do think we're all friends. But, you know, chum, close chum, they would not be able to think of me as their teacher. That would be lost. And like I said, this is one of the things that that new group that Craig Holiday, Rick Archer, somebody else, they got together and they put together this group, which is talking about the scruples that a spiritual teacher should follow. This is one of the things they say, that that a teacher should not be friends with her students. So it's not that, like here in La Vida, I do get together with people from time to time, but if they pay close attention, they'll notice that there's also some spaciousness there. And that's just because I know that's how it has to be. Yeah, the ethics of awakening, or the ethics of the teaching, really. Yeah, clean lines versus confused lines, Jay says. So although I love you all very, very much, and I do think of you as friends, you know, there will be a limit to the chumminess, right? The questioner says, the first time I came here, Maharaj told me that my I am-ness was a food product and that Lord Krishna's consciousness was the same as a donkey's consciousness. I tried to get a reservation out of Bombay that day, but I couldn't get one for a week and I had to stay. Before Nisargadatta answers, I just want to say, Lord Krishna's consciousness is the same as a donkey's consciousness. If that wasn't true, then there would be more than one consciousness, right? At least he didn't say Lord Krishna's consciousness is the same as a donkey's ass, which is what I thought he was going to say. As far as the I am-ness being a food product, what I hear Nisargadatta saying is that the body is a food product, but that the I am-ness that we experience as humans would not be here if it were not for the body. He said this several times. So it's not directly that the I am-ness is a food product, but he does link the body and the I am-ness. Lately in my contemplation, in my seven steps contemplation, isn't it funny how I resist talking about what I'm noticing? Okay, now I'm going to have to talk about my seven steps contemplation. I always seem to resist going into the furthest reaches of my own clarity. You know, I don't mind talking about the clarity I'm a little more comfortable with. It's hung around a little longer. But when I'm, you know, I'm always pushing the envelope. And the stuff that's right here where I'm pushing, there's always resistance to, oh God, am I going to talk about that now? But I am. I'm going to work right through that resistance and talk about it. But what's been happening with my seven steps contemplation lately is that I have been seeing very, very clearly that the sense of self, which could be called the I am-ness, right? The sense of self comes from consciousness projected through a programmed brain, a conditioned brain, many people say. This is why often you'll hear teachers say that babies don't have that sense. You know, little infants don't have that sense. And the reason they don't have that sense yet is there's not enough conditioning here. You know, once they start to get certain ideas like your mommy, your daddy, I'm baby, this is okay, this is not okay. Once they start getting that conditioning in, then the sense of self arises. So you see, the consciousness itself that they're born with, that is just awareness. But when that awareness begins to learn through the brain, and the brain begins to create these neural pathways, and then that consciousness is shining through that brain, that creates the sense of self. That also creates the sense of person. Every single one of us, whoever we think we are as people, you know, like if you were to sit down at a social party somewhere and you're not being all spiritual, and someone asks you who you are and what you like and where you've been, you know, and you answer all of those questions from the person, that's all just brain program. That's consciousness shining through the brain, and you're thinking, this is who I am. Well, the brain is most definitely a part of the body, which means without the body, that sense of I am would not exist. So the first time I came here, Maharaj told me that my I am-ness was a food product. Yeah, Don says it's the Don filter. Exactly. Only mine's the Regina Don filter. Yeah. The first time I came here, Maharaj told me that my I am-ness was a food product, and that Lord Krishna's consciousness was the same as a donkey's consciousness. I tried to get a reservation out of Bombay that day, but I couldn't get one for a week, and I had to stay. Nisargadatta says, many talented and well-known people have come here, but they come with great humility. Is there any one of them who has knowledge about himself? The questioner says, I am practicing Nama Japa, which is a mantra like the I am that I am mantra that Inner Ramana recommends. I am practicing Nama Japa. Is that all right? Nisargadatta says, recite the sacred name. That is all right. But the important thing is to recognize and understand what is the presiding principle by which you know you are and by which you perceive everything else. You must look at yourself, get to know yourself. The riddle of spirituality cannot be solved by your intellect. At the most, your intellect can provide you with livelihood. And that's interesting because he's not saying the intellect doesn't have a purpose, right? I mean, you know, you can go to college and you can become a double engineering major. Jasmine's in the room. And get a job, and make money. You know, the mind is good for that. Right? The mind is good for that. But all of that is not going to tell you who you are. In fact, all of that is actually just additional brain programming. It's program. You know, and if I do go to college and I get a double engineering major and then I get a job as a biomedical engineer and I'm with that job for a while, a part of my identity becomes I'm a biomedical engineer. But was I a biomedical engineer when I was born? No, of course I wasn't. And aren't I still the same being that I was when I was born? In fact, ultimately, we're the same consciousness that we were before we were born. But we'll keep it simple. The day I was born, at most, if I identify with that, I was aware, And maybe I would say then I was a body, and I might even say I was a female body at birth. There's nothing else that I would have had at that point. So even if we just take the physical, we don't have to go into the metaphysical. If you just take the physical, you were born aware, you know, alive and aware with a male or a female body. Everything else that you have taken on since then is brain programming. You weren't born with any of it. None of it is who or what you are. And again, we're just talking the physical here. None of it is who or what you are. He said that these talented and well-known people have come to him, but they came with great humility. Is there any one of them who has knowledge about himself? I'm not 100% certain where Nisargadatta is going with this, mainly because he put the great humility in there. That, you know, great humility in my mind would be, I do not know who I am. That would be great humility. And I do not know who I am is a great improvement over I'm a movie star. I'm an engineer. I'm an architect. I'm a businessman, right? But then you go from I'm a movie star, I'm a businessman, to I do not know who I am. That's great humility. And you go through the I don't know who I am to discovering yourself as life awareness. So maybe Nisargadatta is saying they were at the stage of not knowing who they were. But I don't know for sure that he's saying that. I do know that Ramana Maharshi used to teach something very similar, which Nisargadatta is also pointing at, because he talks about your mind will never wake you up. Your intellect cannot do that for you. Ramana Maharshi used to talk about these people who knew all kinds of things. And then he would say, but do they know who they are? And he would basically point out, what good is it to know encyclopedias worth of knowledge if you don't know who you are? So maybe Nisargadatta is teaching that same lesson here. It's difficult for me sometimes to know exactly what he's pointing at. But he goes on to say, whatever you try to become, that is not you. So it's wonderful to become a biomedical engineer, you know, when you're a young person, Jasmine's age. But that is not what she is. That is not who she is. Right? It's just a livelihood that she has chosen. She's the same consciousness as a donkey, which also means, yeah, she's looking at me now, which also means she's the same consciousness as Lord Krishna. You see? Same consciousness as Jesus. You know, that's the one we would use in our culture. The same consciousness as Jesus. And so, whatever you try to become, that is not you. Before the words come out, before you say, I am, that is you. And like I said, with the baby, you know, the baby does not yet have that sense of I am. The baby is just pure awareness, because there isn't enough brain programming yet to create that sense of I am. So before you say I am, before that sense exists, that's what you are. And I often think this is why Jesus said, you have to become like little children to inherit the kingdom. You know, it's that state prior to the programmed brain, prior to the sense of I am, and certainly prior to the sense of I am a mother, I'm a biomedical engineer, I am stupid, right? Prior to all of that. Whatever you try to become that is not you, before the words come out, before you say, I am, that is you. You must be concerned only with yourself. Don't worry about anybody else. What are you? And of course, when you find that answer, you also find what everyone else is and what everything else is, which is why you then understand that Lord Krishna has the same consciousness as a donkey. And that no longer sounds like an insult like it did for this individual in the beginning, right? You know the universal consciousness. And you know that's what everyone and everything is, regardless of whether they're engineers or ministers or murderers. So that's the end of January 12th, everyone. And again, it's been fun hanging out with you. And I'll see you all around. I will be here next Wednesday night. So I'll see you then.